So thank you for having me here this morning. It's wonderful to be with you. I was here a couple of months ago leading a workshop as part of your search for your new settled minister, and it's an exciting process you've embarked on. So when I was growing up, one of my favorite recordings was a musical comedy by Stan Freberg called The United States of America, Volume 1. It was the first of what was supposed to be, I think, 4 volumes. I think he did eventually do the second volume, but never completed the project. It covered the history, that first one, covered the history of the discovery of America, well, discovery of the New World by Columbus, up through the Revolutionary War. Of course, all as seen through the really outrageously twisted lens of Stan Freberg. It actually begins with Columbus escaping from out the window of Queen Isabella's bedroom when the king arrives home unexpectedly. Now, those of you who might be familiar with this work of Freberg's may remember the scene where George Washington is preparing to take his men across the Delaware, that famous crossing of the Delaware. The weather is terrible, spirits are low, as are the supplies. But according to Freberg, George Washington has more important matters on his mind. He's having trouble deciding which boat to use for the crossing, Donald Duck or Goofy. His assistant can be heard imploring him to hurry. Sir, the men are beginning to freeze. But Washington ignores him, instead standing first in one boat and then in the other, asking his assistant, "What do you think? Is it me? Is it me?" He finally settles on the boat that's him, but then has trouble deciding which sandwich to buy for lunch, tuna or ham on rye. His last comment to his aide is, "I don't know, I guess I'll take the tuna, but I don't know, do you think it's me?" His assistant shouts, "It's you, for God's sake, General, it's you." I was reminded of that scene a few years ago when I was vacationing with my sister and her husband on Cape Cod, where they have a house. We'd driven into Provincetown one day to just, you know, no purpose other than to wander around, see the sights, and perhaps do a little shopping. So not long after we arrived, I slipped into a store that sold hats, a hat store. I've always loved hats, loved trying them on, and sometimes I buy them, but then I actually never really wear them. I just always feel self-conscious in a hat and like I'm drawing too much attention to myself, which you may find odd that a minister is worried about drawing attention to myself, but anyway. But I went into this store and I began trying on some of the hats, and I didn't see anything that interested me until I was leaving the store, and as I passed the counter, I saw this very unusual hat being displayed. In fact, it was more than just unusual. It was a little bit outrageous. I didn't even have the nerve to try it on because there were just too many people standing around and it was too, attention grabbing. Still, the longer I looked at this hat, the more it called out to me. So I went out and I found my sister and I dragged her back into the store and showed her this strange creation. And she insisted that I put it on. Once I had it on, she exclaimed, "Oh my God, Anne, you have got to buy that. It is so you." Still, I resisted, partly because of the cost. I think it was $35 or $40, and partly because I felt so self-conscious in it. I mean, when would I ever wear it? What would my colleagues think if they saw me in it? Professional, it was not. But Judith kept insisting, and finally, as I usually do with her, I gave in, I handed over the money, and I put my new acquisition on. And as I walked through the streets of Provincetown, one person after another came up to me and asked me where they could get this hat. And I had to tell them the bad news that I had bought the last one. But the greatest moment came when a man standing in a doorway off to the side yelled out to me, "I love your hat. It is so you." And I yelled back, "You don't even know me." He said, "It doesn't matter. I can tell. It's you." Now I have to take it off. It doesn't do anything else I have to say. "Is it me?" we ask. "It's you," comes the response. What does that mean? How is it that others, sometimes even total strangers, can see something in us that we ourselves have not seen or have perhaps forgotten? How much of our true selves do we hide from the world? How much of our true selves do we hide even from ourselves? Great prophets through the ages have admonished us to let our light shine. The Buddha supposedly said to his followers on his deathbed, "Make of yourself a light." But how do we do that if we aren't aware of what our light is? Or even if aware, are afraid to let it shine? There was an 8-year-old child who was asked what she wanted to be when she grew up. She answered, "I think I'd like to be myself. I've tried being other people and it hasn't worked out very well." I wonder if she succeeded in being herself. Or is she now in her 20s or 30s or even 70s and older and still saying, as so many of us still do, "If I could just learn to be myself." We live in a culture and a time which seemingly strives to set us free, which encourages us supposedly to express our true selves. It's certainly what we teach our children in our UU congregations and our grandchildren. Yet at the same time, we live with labels and categories that lock us in before we are even known. We are labeled liberal or conservative, gay or straight, male or female, old or young, beautiful or plain. And we wear some of these labels from the time we are young children. How are we to even know who we are and what we want by the time we're adults with all these categories we're supposed to fit into, let alone how are we to have the courage to move beyond them? How wise that little girl was to realize that she would only fail when trying to be something other than herself. The danger is that we might not fail at it, that we might succeed at submerging our true identity and live a facade, a lie, either to ourselves or everyone else, or both. Norman Cousins said, "What's tragic is not death, but what dies inside us as we live." It is too easy to let die within us our authentic and beautiful selves in deference to what others want us to be, or at least to our perception of what they want us to be. But how can we practice our Unitarian Universalist principle of acceptance of one another if we don't first accept ourselves? Some of you may be familiar with the game Dungeons and Dragons. I guess it's usually played as a computer game now, or at least a board game. But I learned it as a role-playing game about 40 years ago while in seminary. We used only ourselves and our imagination. Yeah, I saw someone go, wow, yeah. A former student of the school, Marsh, called himself the Dungeon Master and led a group of us through that fascinating game. According to my recollection of Dungeons and Dragons, each player first chooses a role to play, like a cleric or warrior or something like that. And then one chooses what's called an alignment. There are only two possibilities, lawful and unlawful. These alignments carry no judgment of good or bad. They simply reflect one's essential nature. I don't recall what role I chose, but I do remember claiming unlawful as my alignment with a great deal of relish as I plunged into the game. But as the game progressed, I kept making mistakes and getting myself and my teammates into trouble. I wasn't able to think the way they were thinking, and I often found myself confused. After a while, our dungeon master stopped the game and announced that he had just put a spell on me, and then he led me out of the room. Once outside, he explained to me that under the spell, my alignment had now been changed to lawful. I was horrified. "What do you mean?" I cried. "Why would you do that?" "Because that's what you are," he replied. "You are a lawful." "Oh, no, no, no," I insisted. "You don't understand. I've been trained in civil disobedience and plan to get arrested. I support radical causes. I'm a radical feminist and a socialist. How can you say I'm a lawful?" "Because," he said, "none of that other stuff matters. What counts is how you respond in situations, and your response is almost always to play by the rules. You are a lawful, Anne. That is your nature. To try to play the game differently will only get you killed off." I was crushed. I'd so wanted to be the kind of person who disrupts the status quo, who pushes the boundaries, who never cares what others think. But over time, I've had to admit that Marsh was on to something. I am a lawful. I do play by the rules, even when participating in protest rallies and pushing boundaries. It doesn't mean that I'm incapable of going against the grain of what's acceptable, or am unwilling to. I have many times in my life, and still on my bucket list is getting arrested for a good cause. It only means that in such an instance, it takes extra energy from me and extra care. It isn't my natural way of being. It makes me uncomfortable. Marsh saw something in me, just as my sister Judith had in the hat shop. Only Marsh saw an aspect of me that was contrary to my self-image. Indeed, I was ashamed of it. And if truth be told, I'm still a bit embarrassed by it. Nevertheless, it was an aspect that was important for me to own, knowing it keeps me out of unintended trouble. More importantly, Marsh pointed it out to me without the harsh judgments I carried. He handed it to me as a gentle gift, wanting only for me to accept myself fully as who I am. That is what we in our religious communities can offer one another, the gift of recognition, the gift of encouragement to be fully who we are, the gift of acceptance of one another. This church is where one ought to be able, in the words of the poet Émile Zola, to live out loud. And that is what Unitarian Universalism has been for so many people who couldn't find acceptance in other religious traditions, a welcoming place, a safe harbor for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender folks, for those who identify themselves as gender fluid, for women wanting to enter ministry at a time when that was not the norm for women. For atheists, agnostics, and pagans, for all those seeking a caravan of hope rather than of despair. Yet if we are honest with ourselves, we must also acknowledge that people of color have not always felt welcome in our congregations. And a recent report from the UUA indicates that not all transgender people feel embraced yet by us. Nor do Christians, political conservatives, working class folks, and those without a college degree. We struggle with this as we must if we're going to live up to our proclamation of inclusivity. I know that you are spending some time this month exploring the theme of identity, especially your identity as a congregation. Who have you been in the past? Who are you now? Who do you want to be in the future? Just as it can be difficult to be ourselves as individuals, so too can it be difficult to know and to be who we are as a congregation. Over the years, I have known congregations who wanted so deeply to be something that they were not, and then they expected their new minister to take them to that place, to turn them into that something, when it just wasn't who they were. They needed instead to embrace their identity, their true alignment, so that they could live out loud who they were as a congregation and celebrate that. So who are you? Where does your passion lie, both as an individual and as a congregation? How would it be for you to come out of whatever closet might still hide your essence? The path to intimacy, whether that be with another human being or with our God, begins with a deep knowing and sharing of ourselves. We must stop the voices that tell us who we should be and get back to that one clear voice within us which says, "This is who I am. This is who I celebrate. This is the one I will love." That might mean wearing an outrageous hat with plastic fruit on top. But more importantly, celebrating who you are might mean taking the risk of speaking your truth openly and clearly. It might mean living your faith and praying out loud. It might mean entering a love relationship that could cause you to be rejected by others. What's important is to be able to look at yourself and say, "This is me." Be yourself. You are beautiful. Be yourself. You have a light that shines. Be yourself. You are made of the same stuff as the stars and the trees and all creation. You have the life throb of ages dancing in your blood at this very moment. It's you. Love it. Amen.